All right, welcome folks to the December 8th, 2021 Aries Working Group call. This is a Hyperledger call. We have an antitrust policy notice and a Hyperledger code of conduct. Please mind those as it helps the community be all sorts of happy. I have the agenda link in the Zoom chat. And Daniel, if you have any links, there's a spot there that I didn't fill anything out yet that you're welcome to drop links if you'd like for future reference. You can do that now or after the call. Either one will work fine. Okay. So you're welcome to add your name to the attendees list. Stephen, the Did Indy call was yesterday. Is there any reporting you can give us on that? Or I'd rather it was the Indy contributors call, but you were discussing the Did Indy method.
The big thing out of that is the likelihood that BCGov will be soon announcing a code with us with funding attached for somebody to implement the Did Indy method at Indy node, Indy Plenum level. And then optionally, if they have Rust expertise or somebody else has Rust expertise, can join in and do the Indy BDR portion of that. So that's what we're looking to do, but we haven't officially announced it. They're still going through final approvals on that. Ideally, we would start, have someone chosen by the end of December, and they can start in January.
That would be amazing.
Yes. Basically, I was a little surprised. We had 16 or 17 people on the call. So there's a lot of interest in it. Everyone wants it because they all have an interest in seeing it, but there wasn't, there was some commitment to do some work, but not the core work. And that's what I was a little disappointed in, is we still don't have anyone willing to do the core work. So hopefully the BCGov initiative will enable that core work to get done.
Absolutely. And I hope that is successful. I appreciate BCGov's willingness to step up and offer a bounty for this. That's fantastic. Cool. Thank you for reporting on that. Are there any projects that want to share work updates today?
We will have I'll update this in the notes, but an 073 RC0 will probably go out today for ACAPI. a number of new things in the new release, including the multi-ledger support. There is a bug fix for a thing that affects a mediator. And so that's a key one that's in there. It's probably the key driver in that. We want to have that mediator done. So look for that coming. And then the other key thing that's happened recently is that Aries Mediator service is a new repo in the Aries project, and it is an instance of a mediator, sort of a mediator in a box scenario, similar to what Vaughn Network is to Indy, so that you can, as a developer, deploy a mediator quickly and easily and use it for development and for production scenarios. There is guidance for deploying a production mediator that can be scalable and used across, used in any sort of scenario. It's built around a dependency on a released version of an ACAPI artifact, and has a bunch of typical dot manage tools and things like that to make it easy to spin up and run. So
cool.
That is available now in the community, and a couple of people are making contributions to it to get it all ready. Tied to that, for those that want to know this, there is a work going on in the ACAPI sphere for externalizing the queue. Currently, there's an in-memory queue for work in ACAPI, and that of course is not so good when you're in a scaled environment. We've used it many times in scaled environment, and it's not that it hasn't been a problem for us, but you know, it will happen at the worst time, of course. Murphy will kick in. So this will allow you to deploy an instance of ACAPI, for example, on a scaled environment and using something like Redis or Kafka as an external queue. And and basically just by adjusting your Docker configuration and startup parameters, you can use this external queue. Your container configuration where the external queue is referenced by ACAPI and used. So there you go.
Cool. Any other projects that want to share updates?
I'll just give a brief update on Aries Framework JavaScript. Work is progressing within the Ontario Digital Services, of which I'm now a part, on AIP2. I'm looking at issue credentials version 2, and there's another developer who's doing proof request version 2. That work is scheduled to continue on into the new year and up to about February, I think. So that work is progressing quite well. So that's AIP2 for AFJ.
Fantastic. Thank you, Mike.
Welcome.
Other updates? All right. On the agenda today, there are two things, and I may sneak in a bonus quickly. We held the Aries Mobile Summit meeting again yesterday, and we had a Credential UX Part 2 talked about governance frameworks and auto acceptance of things and good and bad ways to do it. Auto acceptance, one of the things that came out of that was a renaming of auto accept to I'm going to get it wrong because I don't have the notes in front of me, to auto or policy acceptance as a, or policy approval as a concept to clarify what you mean by auto accept, which I thought was really good. I also talked about auto approval or bulk approval rather of saying, hey, there's a series of credentials that I want to approve. And then we also talked briefly about like pre-approval. If someone sort of pre-approves a credential to be shared in a scenario prior to the actual request being made, then it can be automatically granted according to that. So a handful of really useful pieces of that conversation. That recording is not up yet, but will be shortly. Next week will be our last summit session. We will be talking about general UX and as well as a wrap up where we talk about all the different elements that we've talked about and the different pieces of work going on to help us coordinate work on those various topics. So the summit will be over, the work will be not. That way we can organize and continue to use this meeting to sort of follow up on the various aspects that are being researched and everything else. I anticipate that we'll want to do this again, probably in the new year at some point, as we sort of reach some progress on some of those issues and want to reconvene and discuss mobile specific issues around that. So looking forward to making that happen. It's been good. And we've had lots of really engaging discussion. And with one exception that I haven't been able to trace down a recording yet, they are recorded and posted that you can listen to at your leisure. One thing that I wanted to see real quick, I wanted to bring this up. I have been leaned on. I've been working on the pickup protocol V2, and I've had some influence pressed upon me that I think is wise to change the way that this actually works. And so I bring this up in case you're curious or you're involved. I would like your feedback, and also just to let you know that we're considering a change here. So message delivery. Oh, let me render this. The idea is that you can request message delivery from a mediator that has been queuing for you. Not all mediators do that, But if it queues up for you, this is particularly useful in a mobile sense, then this can work. So the idea is that you can request messages either just generally with a limit or for a specific recipient key. If you're trying to retrieve messages that are relevant to a single conversation or to a single relationship rather, then that can help you there. Rather than just have the messages be delivered normally, this delivery type allows for basically wrapped delivery of those messages. What this does is it makes the delivery of these messages more explicit and easier to track and acknowledge on both the message recipient side and on the message holder side, the mediator side, to make that happen. And so this is a change. This is still, this is still in the state of this protocol such that it can be changed. If you are doing this or have interest in this, then please reach out. I just wanted to raise just very brief awareness about that because of the change that was happening. And with that, the next thing on the agenda is the presentation on the gossip protocol by Daniel. Are there any adjustments or changes to the agenda we need before we pass it over to Daniel? All right, Daniel, it is yours.
Okay, share screen. There we go. Okay, so first of all, the link to my slides is here, and I've also pasted it in the meeting notes, so you can go look it up if you'd like to look at these later. Having said that, I'm just going to go ahead and go into presentation mode. Slideshow, start from the beginning. Okay, you still seeing my screen? It didn't get lost?
We are.
Okay. So what I'm going to present is some thinking that I believe is relatively simple about a very complex problem. I have been wrestling with this problem in one way or another for 4 or 5 years. And I feel like I kind of got beyond the complexity to some simplicity, which made me very happy. So I'm kind of excited to talk about this. Let me start by telling a story about why I was worried about this, and it will also kind of frame the discussion. When I came to SICPA, I started working on a DIDCOM protocol for transferring money. And the first version of it that we imagined was just a two-party protocol, but pretty quickly we decided we needed a third party. And there's a bunch of historical reasons for this, and we don't need to get into them. But the point was that I suddenly said to myself, oh boy, I'm going to have to go solve the problem that I've known has been lurking in the DIDCOM Hyperledger Aries ecosystem forever, because I've been talking about three-way and N-way conversations as an extra feature in the system. And they're possible today, but I knew there were some clumsinesses about how it worked. And I said to myself, okay, it's time for me to really get serious about this problem. Let's see if I can figure out how to solve it. So you'll notice that I put some badges or icons over the three main boxes here in my picture. In the protocol that I was working on, I imagined there would be a buyer and a seller, and then this third party that I called a witness. And for those who are interested, the witness has a role in triple signed receipts. But anyway, I imagined that the seller was often going to be some kind of a merchant. So they would probably have a server. And the witness would often be some kind of service online. And so they would have a server as well. But I imagined that the buyer would often be using a cell phone. So I actually wrote out a state machine and a number of other things for a protocol that had those assumptions baked into it. And then after I got it written down a bit and started looking at it, I started questioning my assumptions. And here's where my head went. First, I said, well, the buyer might not have a phone. Maybe the buyer has a tablet. Okay, that didn't concern me too much. And then I said, well, what if the buyer has a laptop? That still didn't concern me. I still felt like that fit just fine. What if the buyer has a server and is online, or what if the buyer is an IoT device, so it's a little bit like a server in some ways? I thought that was still okay. So this much variety in my design was not causing me any worry. But then I started saying, well, what if the seller is actually somebody at a farmer's market and it's just a person and they just have a cell phone? If you're faster than me, you'll probably be thinking the thing that after a while kind of distilled out of this for me. I started thinking, wait a minute, if I change my assumptions about what kind of party the seller is, I suddenly have different connectivity. My first version of this diagram assumed that a buyer could sell a message to a seller whenever they wanted. A seller could send a message back to a buyer and so forth. And now if the seller is on a cell phone, I'm not sure that the connectivity is quite the same thing. And it might force me to re-examine some other assumptions in my protocol. And then I said, well, what if the seller is on their laptop? And then I started thinking about witnesses. And I said, well, the witness could be a service on the internet, but what if the witness is actually embodied in firmware in a point of sale terminal? And that changes some connectivity assumptions. And then what if the witness is actually just a third human being playing this role? And then I started really getting expansive. And I said, well, what if the buyer doesn't actually have any of my first four devices? What if the buyer has a smart card? What's the connectivity of a smart card? And I started to feel really uncomfortable about drawing arrows, two-way arrows, from the buyer to anybody. And so after I thought about this for a while, I came up with the following four variations on my three-way protocol. There's the fully connected model where anybody can send anybody a message. There's what I called a wings model because it looks like wings, where a buyer and a seller want to transact, but neither of them has a device that has any electrical power. So they're depending on the witness having a device like a point of sale terminal where they can lay their card on it. That generates the electrical field that creates the the power that the smart card uses to compute. So suddenly there's no possibility to send a message between the buyer and the seller in the wings model. And then I realized there's even these funky ones at the bottom where you have a seller that has a smart card and the buyer has a phone, or vice versa. And the point is, with each of these changes, each of these four parts of the picture, I had to go back and change the diagram I had written that said seller sends a message to buyer, then buyer sends a message to witness, you know, whatever my protocol was. Every time I changed the connectivity assumptions, my protocol changed. And I hated that. I did not want to have four different protocols to do fundamentally the same thing. I wanted a level of abstraction. This is, you know, the recurring theme of all computer science, it seems, is when you find a pattern, but something is preventing you from, leveraging the pattern, then you create a level of abstraction that hides the differences. So I wanted an abstraction that hid from me all of the assumptions about connectivity. Now, years ago, we had our first discussions in Hyperledger Aries calls about NWISE scenarios. And the list that's on the page here is a bunch of scenarios that I have articulated before. These are scenarios that I think do make sense to model as an NWISE kind of a protocol, probably. You could model some or even all of them without using NWISE. For example, let's say a study group over on education, that's in the right column. You could say, you know what, the study group is using WhatsApp, and everybody in the study group, when they have something to say, they just report it to the hub, and then the hub pushes out the message to all the spokes. And that can work fine. There's a discussion in this link down here about the sweet spot for NWISE versus the hub and spoke model. But the thing that I've learned since I first wrote up this kind of a list 3 or 4 years ago is that there's actually a more compelling one than any of these to me. And it is the simple case of Alice having three devices. There is a way you can coordinate all of Alice's devices by requiring them to phone home to some central authority for Alice. So Alice could designate her cloud agent as her central authority and say, no other agent is able to do anything without coordinating with my cloud agent. But my feeling is that that kind of solution, it's perfectly fine for some things, but it's not a good general solution. There are plenty of problems where that breaks down. The simple one that I know will happen to me at least 1,000 times is I'll lose my phone and then I'll pick up some other device and want to conduct business with it. And when I finally find my phone in the couch cushions, I can't require that the way my phone participates in the world is to guarantee it has a perfect picture before it does something else. Maybe I had my laptop, I did a few transactions, then I turned my laptop off, then I pick up my phone, but I don't have an internet connection. If my phone doesn't know what my laptop did, it can't be catastrophic. So what I'm trying to claim here is that this problem that I was finding with my three-way protocol, this connectivity assumptions issue, is actually quite an important problem. And there's really, when you boil it all down, I think there's two solutions. You can centralize, or you can actually tolerate the decentralized world, but be sophisticated about how you do it. So this presentation is about a way that I came up with to tolerate the decentralized world without doing a lot of work. hopefully you're with me so far. Maybe I better check and, you know, I have this bad habit of droning on and on. Is everybody with me so far? Does it make sense what the problem is, at least the way I've described it?
So far, so good.
Okay. So I decided that human gossip is an interesting way to solve this problem. There's actually several other patterns that we could talk about. We could talk about Brownian motion. We could talk about the way that DNA propagates in a population in biology, whatever. But I'm going to use the metaphor of human gossip here as a way to think about truly decentralized information spreading. Because that's the one thing we can say about gossip. We may not always have a high opinion of it, but without any centralized coordination, it does cause information to flow. So when I sat down and drew a picture of gossip, this is the picture I came up with. For any given topic, there's kind of some initial recognition that the topic is even a thing. And let's take the example that you know, you have a bunch of neighbors in an apartment building, and one of the neighbors this morning slipped and fell, and another neighbor observed it. So defining the topic could be as simple as, if the neighbors are A, B, and C, and A is the one that fell, then you know, B could meet C in the hall and say, hey, did you hear that so-and-so fell down yesterday? That's defining a topic. Once a topic is known to exist, then there is this unordered sequence of actions that can take place as much or as little as you want that involves sharing information. That's the top left part of the thing. Listening to what other people have to say about the topic, asking them for information, and checking to see if they know something. And we do that not super proactively, but even without being super proactive, information spreads remarkably well under that model. So the key thing that I was trying to achieve with respect to my first problem description about connectivity is I wanted to tolerate a world like this one, where you have multiple parties that need to know stuff. So I've got 5 little circles here that represent 5 parties that need to know something. And you want to be able to make assumptions about connectivity that are fairly weak. This is like a directed graph. So I've got, you know, arrows on one side of a line here. And so at time t sub 0, the connectivity picture looks like this. At time t sub 1, it maybe looks like this. At time t sub 2, it looks like that. Over time, the connectivity picture, if you create a union of all these graphs, looks like this one at the bottom. And this is the characteristic that I was trying to exploit with gossip, is that I can basically tolerate very imperfect flow of information as long as I have time to tolerate it and there is a reasonable amount of connectivity in the world. So here's the model I came up with. I created a protocol called the gossip protocol, and gossip stands for something clever, but I don't remember right now. It's actually an acronym. But anyway, there's an actual protocol to swap information, but there's also this mode in that mirrors human gossip where you're not running that protocol, but you're still kind of leaving some breadcrumbs in other conversations that allow the gossip protocol to be re-triggered as needed. So in this particular picture, you see an active band of work and a passive band of work. The active band is where you're actually talking the gossip protocol. The passive band is where you're doing something else, but you're leaving these little breadcrumbs. So let's say what you're doing is the two neighbors meet in the hallway because they agreed that they were going to decorate for the holidays. And while they're in the holidays running the decorate for holidays protocol, one says to the other, did you hear that A fell down today? That's not gossip yet, because it's just a little conversational hook. If the other party says, yeah, I know all about it, then nothing further is said. If the other party says, wait, I didn't know that, tell me about that, then suddenly you've kicked into active mode. So now let me explain how this would actually work. And what I'm hoping is, after I explain this, it might seem a little bit complex at first, but when you step back and squint at it, it's actually really quite simple. The first thing you do is you identify a topic, okay? So this is active, which means it fits on the blue band here. Okay, this is equivalent to defining topic A and saying something new on it, these first two things, okay? So defining topic A is just this part. You're sending a message called a sync message. Oops. I wanted to highlight that word sync, but I guess if I click, it takes me on. You're sending a sync message to the other party, and you're sending in that sync message something that identifies a topic. So just the fact that this is a sync message and that it has a topic identifier, and this could be a did, it could be a GUID, I don't really care, but that is the first step. Then the second step is say something about the topic, and that is taken care of by this thing that says events attach, and then you attach two different events. So I'll explain a little bit more about that in a second, but let me give a concrete example because it'll help us as we walk through this. I'm not going to use my payment example. I'm going to use a situation where Alice, Bob, and Carol are business partners, and the thing they're trying to do is they're trying to have a rich chat. So rich chat would be the kind of thing that you use WhatsApp for, or Signal or whatever. Okay. So let's say that one day Alice is staring at the ceiling and she says, "Hey, you know what? We really ought to get together as business partners and talk about our strategy for next year. Let's talk about it over lunch." So she gets out her rich chat client and she sends a message to Bob and Carol. And the substance of the message is a single line of markdown that says, "Hey, I'm hungry and I want to talk. Let's do lunch." So that message would be, the markdown for that message would be in the base 64 field at the very bottom right over here. That's Alice's post in a rich chat. Okay. The first attachment here is some metadata. Basically, if you can imagine being in WhatsApp or Signal or Slack or something and saying you want to start a new conversational thread, what do you do when you start a new thread? You give it a topic. So this first message that she's attached, or this first payload that she's attaching to her message, is some metadata about the topic. And the second one is an event with respect to the topic. Okay, so this is the event she's really wanting to send. "I'm hungry, let's get lunch." Now, in this fictional situation, let's suppose that Alice has an active connection to Bob for some reason, or at least she can reach him over his DID, but she doesn't have a very good success trying to get a hold of Carol. So I'm going to skip this transcript slide for a second. So Bob finds out about this message. He actually receives this message. But let's say that Alice attempts to contact Carol, and remember, I'm trying to deal with a flexible world of connectivity. In this case, there is no connectivity to Carol. She's offline, whatever. So it never gets delivered. Carol never sees it, but Bob sees it. So now the knowledge in the system here is that Alice knows that there is a topic, and she knows what the first meaningful event was in the topic. It was her post about, "She's hungry, let's get lunch." And Bob knows the same thing, but Carol doesn't know anything. Okay. So now, actually, I'm realizing that I made this even more ambitious in the write-up that I did. So let me change it. Let's say Alice tries to send this message. Well, no, never mind. I've got to simplify, or this will get too gnarly. So let's say that Bob receives Alice's message and he wants to reply. Okay. He wants to just say, "Great, let's do it, or, you know, what time or where. He's just responding to what he gets from Alice. So he creates a message, and his message, oh, wait. Yeah, he tries to send his message, but now let's say in the split second that he composed his message and hit enter, now Alice went offline. So now nobody's connected. But Bob knows about the first message, and he knows that he wrote a reply. If you were to look at the transcript of this conversation in the equivalent of Slack or WhatsApp on Alice's machine, you'd only see Alice's message. If you looked at it at Bob's machine, you'd see Alice's message plus Bob's. And if you were over on Carol's machine, you wouldn't see anything yet. Okay. But Bob gets involved in other things. And then later he decides he's going to do something else. So let's say he decides he's going to collect signatures from his business partners. That's not a Slack thing at all. This is a totally different protocol. He's now in the passive mode, okay? He's not actively gossiping. He's trying to run some other protocol. And while he's running some other protocol, here's the collect signatures protocol here that he's running, he adds a gossip header to it. And what he says in his gossip header is, hey, I know about a topic where we're gossiping, and it's this ID number, and here's a snapshot hash of it. And here's the last time that anything changed about it, as far as I know. And then he goes on to do his normal thing. So this is the equivalent of the two neighbors meeting in the hall to, you know, do holiday decorations. And one just happens to say to the other while they're out there, by the way, did you hear that so-and-so fell? You know, and that's why I put passive up at the top. Okay. So Bob wants to send out this message where he's collecting signatures to Alice and Carol. And let's say Alice is still offline. Bob's really having a hard time getting back with Alice. But now Carol receives Bob's message about collecting signatures, and she notices the gossip header on it. Okay. So she says, hey, wait a minute. Bob said we were gossiping about some topic, 5937 such and such. I don't know a dang thing about that. I'm curious. So she puts a gossip header on her message and says, and this is now active. She's flipped out of the yellow band where she was talking about checking signatures. She's now back up in the green band where she's actively gossiping. She says, hey, Bob, on this topic 5937, whatever, my snapshot state is null. I know nothing about this topic. And because she knows nothing about it, the body of her message is empty. She has nothing to say when she's syncing other than what she can convey in the headers, namely, I don't know what you're talking about. So she sends this back to Bob, and Bob replies to her. Okay. Bob says, and this is, he's being active too. So he's in the green band. He says, hey, I'm syncing with you. And on the topic 5937, I'm attaching some events. Now, what are the events A, B, and C here? The first event is the definition of the topic that Alice started out. The second event is Alice's first post. And the third event is Bob's response. So he gossips all of this in active mode to Carol. And now we need to talk about snap hashes, because this becomes important. When you're gossiping, you have to be able to identify whether you have seen a particular piece of information before. When I say piece of information, I mean an attached payload. Okay. So there's a little bit of information about how to compute a snap hash. I'm not going to go into it in great detail, but the point is that it's very cheap and efficient to communicate about whether you know something. So back in this request, Alice says, my current snap hash is null. But if you go back right here, Bob says, my snap hash is this thing right here. And I'm not being simplistic when I use a small, short identifier. It does not have to be a full giant hash. It doesn't have to be cryptographically strong. The same kind of informality that you use with GitHub and commit hashes could be used here, because the scope of this hash, it only has to be unique among the three people that are gossiping, or the five people that are gossiping, across however many events are in the topic. And as long as you're pretty confident it can be reliably unique in that case, you don't have to be fancier. So anyway, that's about snap hashes. Now, let's say Alice and Carol eventually start talking to each other, and they are talking about anything. It could be deliberately gossiping, or they could be talking about something completely different. You know, here's the shareholder votes, or can you please sign this check, or whatever. But for whatever reason, they're talking, and they're using the gossip headers in passive mode. And they're just saying, by the way, you know, there's this topic that we've been gossiping about. And just in case you're curious, this is what I think is the current state of the topic. And because they're doing that, Alice finds out that Carol knows something she does not know. So now Alice sends a request. Hey, I have a different snapshot hash. And wait a minute. This is mislabeled. This is Carol's sync request because the snapshot is null. There is a follow-up message with Alice, but it's not this one, because Alice's snapshot wouldn't be null. Alice's snapshot would be something that contains the first two events and nothing else. So when Carol sees that, Carol says, hey, we're out of sync. And I know your hash. I recognize that hash that you've got. That's represented by the first two events. And I know about those. But I know something you don't know. So Carol sends to Alice some extra information, and they get synced up again. So if I step back from what I just described, and yes, it might feel a little bit complicated, but it, really, there's a single state protocol where all you're doing constantly is syncing. Okay, that goes back to this. The gossip protocol, the top half of it is the active part, and the bottom half of it is, or let's see. No, the left half is the active part and the right half is the passive part of this. But basically, you're just always syncing. You're gossiping information. And it's not complicated. You can gossip about as many topics as you want. And the way that you gossip is by exchanging attachments in DIDCOM messages, where the attachment is a payload of a particular type. So this mechanism allows various kinds of problems to all be solved the same way. The first problem that I would solve with it is the one that I used to solve with peer DIDs, where I wanted to have, Alice and Bob each have a, you could call it a micro ledger. But, you know, the thing that tracks what the state of my DID document and your DID document is, you could gossip about what you know about changes to DID documents. And if you did that, the nice thing is Alice could have a situation like the one I described, where she loses her cell phone in the couch cushions. But maybe that cell phone has managed to have a transaction with one of Bob's devices. Now, that one of Bob's devices could interact with some of Bob's other devices, or it could just interact back with Alice. But either way, if it's gossiping if it's putting a gossip header on its messages of whatever type they are, Alice's other devices will find out what Alice's phone in the couch cushions knew, and so will Bob's other devices. And you don't have to, it's like a self-healing system because the information will just flow as soon as a connection exists. So in my mind, this solves the problem of information flow with peer DIDs. It also can be applied to all of the, you know, problems back on this list when you're trying to do N-wise stuff. And in particular, going back to my first couple of slides, it makes it so that I can design a protocol and say something like the buyer sends the seller a message, even if the connectivity underneath is the wings model. Because the buyer doesn't actually have to have a direct connection to the seller to guarantee that the seller gets a message. The buyer just has to gossip about the message, and there has to be an eventually connected graph that lets the seller find out about it. And so suddenly my protocol design problem gets way simpler. I don't have to have four versions of my protocol for four different connectivities. Okay, back to the end here. A couple of things to keep in mind. One of them is about the notion of auth-crypting. The way that auth-crypting actually really works, when you squint away the details, is that Alice and Bob are having a conversation, and when Alice wants to encrypt for Bob and prove to Bob that it's really from her, she uses a secret that both of them know. And since Bob knows he didn't send himself the message, he knows it had to have come from Alice. Okay. But in an N-wise protocol, this breaks down because Alice, Bob, and Carol all know a shared secret. So when Alice encrypts it, auth-crypting doesn't work as soon as you have more than two parties, because any of the other parties could have encrypted the message with a shared secret. So what this requires is that you use signatures if you want to make sure that you can't have a malicious Alice gossiping something that Carol never said. You actually have to have the payload signed. And happily enough, DIDCOM attachments allow you to sign payloads. So that's a consequence, and maybe we need to talk about whether it's an acceptable consequence. But you can gossip simultaneously about any number of topics. And the topics can be anything under the sun. It could be something really formal like, you know, state machine stuff for protocols, but it could be something a lot less formal as well. I have a design that I've never, committed anywhere publicly, but it's a design for a rich chat protocol, the equivalent of Slack written over DIDCOM. Many people have talked about this. I know that Timo Glastra worked on it, for example, and I know that some other people are working on one. But I believe if you try to implement rich chat on top of DIDCOM and you want N-wise, you're going to be in trouble because of connectivity problems. So either the people that are doing it are centralizing, or they are smarter than me and figured out a different solution to this problem. But I think you need a solution to do rich chat. Anyway, the last thing to say is, what if you have strong ordering constraints? So this gets to the question, if we wanted to use gossip for like peer DIDs, and you wanted to guarantee that one change to a DID document couldn't happen until the other one was accepted, how do you handle that? And the answer is, every topic can have different constraints. You can say this is a topic that uses first in, first out ordering. So whoever can prove that an event already happened before another event wins, and we will order that way. You could have other topics like rich chat, where it doesn't actually matter if you perceive the order differently than somebody else. So I think that the way that the ordering works should depend on how you define the metadata for the topic. I better stop. I've used up almost all of our time. I want to get some reactions.
I'm going to find my unmute. Fascinating. Do you think, is this only needed for multi-party protocols, or do you think we can use this to enable a secure way to do multi-device?
So I want to use it for multi-device. In my mind, it allows multi-device in a really nice way. Yeah. But if you take a degenerate version of this, it's essentially the pickup protocol that Sam and others have been working on for a long time. A two-party version of this is just the pickup protocol.
Yeah. So what this would allow, if I'm getting this right, is that I could have multiple agents on multiple devices, but still, so I could get notified and aware of what's going on. And I might even be able to direct my device that does have, for example, a credential that is signed with a specific key, but I don't have to worry about sharing all the keys around. Each device has its own keys. And ultimately, for example, a credential is tied to a single device still.
Right.
Am I right?
Yes. Yes.
Okay. So if I actually have a credential on my phone, ultimately, in order to prove that credential, I have to prove it on the phone somehow. The phone's got to do something. The agent that's on my phone has to do something. But I can get full notification of it on all my devices and potentially direct my phone to do it if we have a trusted way to do that.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you. Wow. That's wild.
Well, I think it has some nice benefits. It's not without its complexity, but I don't think it's actually that onerous to just say, look, I'm tracking a transcript for topic X, and I'll just put this one header on everything else I do. And if that triggers me to suddenly say, oh, somebody knows something I don't, then you flip over into this gossip mode where you're being active about figuring out why you know something that I don't, you know?
Yep. I love the fact that it does not affect the protocol layer.
Yeah, this was the thing that I felt so happy about when I was done is, now I don't have to have any of these four varieties that assume particular connectivity. I can just ignore that problem.
Daniel, this is awesome. Point of order, we have a meeting immediately following this one.
Okay.
And so we do need to clear out and leave space for them. But this is fantastic, and I'm grateful for the links. I encourage anyone interested to reach out and to review and offer feedback on all that useful stuff.
I'll just say in closing, there is some relationship not only with the pickup protocol, but also the microledger topic that Robert Mitwicki's been talking about, and some stuff that's been done with Carry, and there's actually a couple of other ones too. So one of the to-do items would be to reconcile all of these. That's enough said. There's just more work to do there. Thanks for giving me the microphone for so long, Sam.
No, it's fantastic. Thank you for presenting. Thanks everyone for coming. I hope your week is a great one, and we will see you all next time.
Bye.